This is KGNU's Morning Magazine for August 15th of 2022. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Thank you for starting off your week with us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, K-12 students are preparing to return to their classrooms this week and next. We'll hear about efforts to transition the region's school buses to electric power. CityCast Denver talks Tabor and the real story behind that $750 check in your mailbox. And we'll hear a preview of what's coming up on this afternoon's Metro Show. At the bottom of the hour, we'll hear the BBC News headlines and then the Hightower Lowdown. After that is Good Ol' CU with Joe Yuhas. Then at 9 a.m., we'll bring you Counterspin, a look at fairness and accuracy in reporting. After that, Carrie Wolfson will be in the Boulder studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. All that's still ahead this morning, but first, these headlines with KGNU's Chiara De Mare.
History Colorado will spend the next year investigating the experiences of children at a former Indian boarding school in Hesperus, Colorado. Governor Polis signed the Native American Boarding School Research Program Act into law in May. Schools that believe to have been a part of a federal program to separate Native American children from their parents have until August 26th to submit documentations for review, according to the Colorado Commission of Indian Affairs. According to a press release, History Colorado has spent the time since the Research Program Act was signed in late May conducting research alongside tribal partners and subject matter experts to research the events within the schools, including deaths and physical and emotional abuse. The first progress meeting for the project will occur on Thursday, September 8th. The Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment is now recommending that patients who got the Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine at Colorado Family Clinic in Wheat Ridge between February 3rd and June 28th of 2022, and patients who received a vaccine between October 9th and April 24th, 2022, at Denver-based Servicios de la Raza, get revaccinated. According to a press release, Colorado Family Clinic received a total of 190 doses of Pfizer vaccines, but did not maintain the required temperature data or records of the number of vaccine doses it administered. COVID-19 vaccines that have not been stored properly may be less effective. The Denver-based clinic, Servicios de la Raza, vaccinated 594 people with this improperly stored vaccine. According to a press release, there are no negative side effects or safety concerns associated with receiving a dose of COVID-19 vaccine, which has not been stored properly. The only risk is that it may not offer protection from COVID-19 the way a valid dose does. Getting vaccinated again will help make sure that you are protected from COVID-19. Open space authorities implement new bear-related leash restrictions. KGNU's Lily Noble has more.
The city hopes the leash requirement will minimize contact between dogs and bears. Disturbing the bears while they're fattening up for winter could decrease their overwinter success, which may lead to them venturing further into the city in search of food. The leash requirement applies to Skunk Canyon up to the Mesa Trail, portions of the Gregory Canyon Trail, Saddle Rock and Amphitheater Trails, and the upper part of Dowdy Draw Trail. These restrictions go into effect today and will run through November 1st. In the case of a bear sighting, remember to stay calm, keep your distance, and slowly leave the area while talking aloud to make the bear aware of your presence. For KGNU, I'm Lily Noble.
Three people were shot and killed, and five others were injured this week in the midst of seven different shootings in Denver. According to the Denver Post, two of the shootings involved police officers firing their guns. The Denver Post also wrote, in the first 6 months of 2022, 43 people were shot and killed, and 141 more were shot and injured in the city, a more than 80% increase from the average of the first 6 months of the three previous years. Boulder County proposed to establish a 0.1% countywide sales tax for the proposal of funding wildfire mitigation efforts to proactively address the risk of wildfires. A new countywide sales and use tax on the November ballot would generate up to $11 million per year for wildfire mitigation. Boulder County Commissioner Matt Jones, who is a former wildland firefighter, is backing the new tax. It's just critical we get ahead to proactively protect homes and forests from these catastrophic wildfires we're having, Jones told 9 News. There was a structure fire late Sunday night in Denver, in the area of Federal and Vesser. The Denver Fire Department posted updates on their Twitter, and according to them, one firefighter received minor injuries and there was no one in the building. The building was under construction and received significant damage. As we move through the summer, the weather is starting to cool down. This week is projected to be below 90s with a lot of rain. There's a flash flood warning in effect across the mountain range today. Nine News reports that the watch ranges from 1 p.m. through midnight. Today in Boulder, it's supposed to start raining around 1 p.m. and let up around 2 a.m. There's a projected high of 80 and a low of 65. In Denver, it's supposed to start raining at 2 p.m. and finish up around 6 a.m. There's a high of 83 and a low of 64. In Fort Collins, the rain is supposed to start at 1 p.m. and end at 11 p.m. There's a high of 79 and a low of 63. Outside the Boulder studio, it's 65 degrees. For KGNU, I'm Kiara Damari.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm Shannon Young. The transportation sector is one of the biggest contributors to greenhouse gas emissions in Colorado. Some school districts in the Denver metro area are exploring ways to transition their school bus fleets from diesel to electric power. It's not a cheap process, and reliability is a big question, but funding is available from federal and state sources. KGNU's Luis Licon spoke with Albert Zamora, Director of Transportation for Denver Public Schools.
Currently, we're purchasing electric vehicles. We don't have any that we're planning to modify into electric vehicles right now. A lot of this became available to DPS as grants became available because obviously the big problem with buying electric buses currently is paying for innovation. So, you know, a regular diesel or gasoline bus costs about $120,000. An electric bus is about $420,000. So those grants had to become available in order for DPS to be able to take advantage of the grant pricing.
There was some recent news where Bluebird is partnering up with a local company here in Longmont, where basically school districts could retrofit their existing fleet of buses into electric vehicles. Do you think that DPS might look into this solution to retrofit and change all of their fleet?
You know, I think it depends on the reliability of those units. Right now, Bluebird is working with Cummins, and Cummins is providing the electric platform in their new buses. Now, if there is opportunities in the future for retrofitting buses with electric power plants, I think it would depend on whether they're reliable, because at the end of the day, we want to make sure that we're providing reliable service to our students. So it's going to depend on innovation and reliability, safety.
And according to a report, DPS plans to use one electric school bus for the upcoming 2022 and 2023 school year. When does DPS plan to retire the old fleet of diesel buses? And is DPS planning to buy any more of these buses? And how are they going to replace them over the years?
So the entire fleet of DPS is about 320 units. We're going to be using about 200 buses this year. And we have one bus that is currently purchased, and we have two on order. Now, we did put in a grant for 25 more electric buses, but that grant hasn't been awarded yet. So we don't know whether we'll get any units from that grant yet.
What kind of savings and or benefits is the district getting from this transition to upgrade its electric school buses?
Well, probably the biggest benefit is health, because these will be zero carbon emission vehicles. Moving away from a platform that the school bus industry has used since probably the 1980s, 1970s. We're moving away from diesel because of their particulate matter and the health concerns that are caused by to the environment. So the biggest thing is obviously health. The second part would be to move to a platform that actually costs us less to both fuel up and to maintain. We expect that an electric bus will cost us about a quarter of what our diesel buses are costing us per mile because of the cost of electricity right now.
And where is the funding coming from to transition its old fleet to electric school buses? Where is the district getting its funding from? I know recently the state legislature and other lawmakers have raised $65 million in grant money to help school districts convert old buses into electric vehicles. And also the EPA has its own program, the Clean School Bus Program, that has $5 billion in funding to support the clean energy transition. Is DPS looking into transitioning and tapping into these funds from the federal government and from the state?
So the three buses that we've purchased currently are purchased off of federal money. So that would be very similar to the monies that you're talking about. Those are coming from the federal government. The grant that we just applied for is the $150 million that our governor just approved to go towards electric buses just for the state of Colorado. So we're applying for both federal and state opportunities.
Do you think that other school districts in the area will follow the footsteps of DPS? Do you know if other school districts in the Front Range have also transitioned? And if not, do you think they will follow the footsteps of DPS to follow with this transition to electric school buses?
So I originally came from Boulder Valley Schools. That's where I was employed before I came to Denver. And we had purchased the very first electric bus in the state of Colorado. So Boulder and Denver were the first districts to technically receive those buses. But we also have Aurora that is also using, now they're buying Thomas buses, we're buying Bluebirds, but they're also buying electric buses. I think that as innovation gets paid for and pricing starts to even out, I think you're going to see more districts move that direction.
Well, thank you very much for joining me in this interview. This was Albert Samoda, the Executive Director of Transportation for Denver Public Schools. And for KGNU, I am Luis Licon.
Coloradans are receiving $750 checks in the mail, but who's to thank? Is it Governor Jared Polis and the Democrats, who rebranded and reworked our tax policy to create this so-called Colorado cashback? Or is it the conservatives who convinced Colorado voters to approve the Taxpayers' Bill of Rights, aka Tabor, in 1992, and have defended it ever since? CityCast Denver host Bree Davies and producer Paul Caroli dive into the politics of Tabor to figure out the real story behind these checks.
We're talking about Tabor because there's this program right now, the Colorado Cashback. Everybody, regardless of income or tax, whatever, however much you filed for taxes, everybody gets $750 back. But I'm confused, Paul. Why are we getting so much money back? Because as far as I recall from Tabor refunds of past, they're not usually this big.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, this is a new thing that's happening this year. And thank you for asking. I loved diving into this and learning more about this. And I do think that, you know, yes, Tabor is like boring and complicated. There's really something important to know here that's going on. And this has gotten caught up in our politics and it's gotten really controversial. But I have a takeaway at the end that I want people to understand from this. I think it's going to be important. But the question of why we're getting this money back now and why is it more than normal? I mean, the reason why it's happening basically is like earlier this year, Governor Polis and Democrats in the state government announced, this was like late April, that they were going to move the regular dispensation of Tabor tax refunds from early 2023 to August and September of 2022 right now. That's why people are getting checks now instead of early next year. So this money is coming from tax refunds.
Okay. Why did they push it forward?
Well, the reason why they're doing it, according to Polis in this announcement earlier this year, this is the way the Democrats talk about it, is
we know this last year has been difficult. Rising prices, gas at $4 a gallon, groceries costing more. And that's why we're working to get this relief out as soon as possible. Instead of government sitting on the money, we want to make sure we get it back to people and empower Coloradans to invest this Colorado dividend in their own families, in their communities, in their everyday needs, or in saving for retirement or for school.
So on the surface, that sounds great. I definitely am a person that does the grocery shopping and often fills my family car tank. And this last year has been kind of bananas. I mean, the price I'm paying for eggs, the price I'm paying for gas, it will, again, my credit card debt is partially due to maybe overspending on groceries through no fault of my own. So this seems like a good idea. I'm scared to say that. I'm scared to say that because everybody I know says repeal Tabor.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, any Democrat in Colorado, you know, hates Tabor. Every Democrat. This has been like a longstanding policy of the party is we want to repeal Tabor. So it's kind of interesting that Polis has now taken it and rebranded it as this Colorado cashback. He's moved the refunds to before the November election, and now he's kind of taking credit for it. And that's what Republicans have been criticizing him for, is being cynical and using this thing that he says that he doesn't like, but now making it a big part of like his reelection campaign. And, you know, these checks are going out a month before the campaigns are really going to start heating up. Tabor has a lot of different parts to it, right, which is part of why it's so complicated. Like, I think the thing that most people think about when they think about Tabor is how it makes it difficult to impose new taxes in the state. So like anytime politicians want to impose a new tax, they have to go to the voters and put it on the ballot. And they have to use this specific language that really says like clearly, like this is how much you're going to pay. Like this is all the big money that you're going to have to pay. And so it makes people want to vote for it less. But broadly, what Tabor does is that it limits the growth of government through a variety of ways. This like making it harder to impose new taxes thing is just one part of it.
Okay.
And this actually gets to the reason why the refunds are bigger this year, because another big part of what Tabor does is that it puts a cap on the state government's annual budget based on a calculation of population increase and inflation. So the government can't grow bigger than a certain cap every year. And the reason why the refunds are bigger this year is because we collected as a state a lot more tax revenue than expected, and it exceeded that cap. So this money is that excess money that the government's not allowed to spend, so they have to send it back to us.
Well, so other than it being part of this thing that Democrats usually don't like, which is the limited government. You know what? Hold on. This limited government idea is not great to Democrats because I'm thinking of previous Tabor refunds where like you're getting tax money back, but there's projects and issues and things I'm thinking about in my city that I would be happy to give my Tabor refund back to go towards. Say, for instance, we've been having this conversation about needing sidewalks. We don't have complete sidewalks in our neighborhoods, or paying teachers more. I don't know. I mean, is that the argument with Tabor, is like giving that money back to the taxpayers could be better used to improve our city overall?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that's what Democrats think, definitely. And, you know, I did a simple calculation here, some advanced math. These checks are going out to 3.1 million Coloradans this week. And so each person's getting $750. Multiply those two numbers together, that's $2.775 billion. Of course, that could do a number of great things. That could go towards, you know, funding our schools better, maybe improving our transportation network. And also, this is going to happen again next year. State economists are projecting a similar amount of excess tax revenue next year. So we can expect a similar check next fall.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, man. This is really complicated in terms of how I feel about it, because I love getting that $750. But I also know that there are things in my city that I would love to see improved. I mean, even like, I mean, with that kind of a, you know, you said 3.1 million people getting $750 back. We could build housing with that.
You could do a lot of things, a lot of good things.
I have to say it feels more complicated than I thought it would, because like I said, I have heard for a long time that Tabor is a problem, that returning money to taxpayers that's usually in smaller increments could be better used other places. Do I still agree with that idea? Yes. But in this moment, when I know folks are especially struggling with things like basic everyday needs, when things are, you know, if inflation is legitimately changing things economically for us, is this bump helping folks? Also, yes. I don't know how I feel about it. It's very complicated. Paul, I know you mentioned at the top of the show that you had a big takeaway from all of this look into Tabor that you were doing. What's your big takeaway about Tabor?
Yeah, well, it comes down to the purpose of Tabor. And I was thinking about this because of a quote I saw from Carbondale Republican State Senator Bob Rankin. He said that the theory of Tabor is to let you continue to fund the government that you currently have. That's the intent. So it's to stop the government from growing. But what I think it's doing is limiting the relative size of government to what they had in 1992. Tabor has essentially put the size of government, which is just a reflection of our values as a state, in stasis. It's locked it in 1992. And so as the population has changed over the last 30 years, and, you know, we've gotten more blue as a state, all those people who maybe are more comfortable paying a little bit more in taxes and getting more and better services in return, they haven't been reflected in the way we fund our government. So that's my big takeaway, I guess, is that Tabor has become a political football. The Democrats have learned how to go on offense, and maybe they're trading short-term gain in this upcoming election for long-term pain of it being harder to repeal this thing once and for all.
Well, thanks, Paul, for explaining Tabor, and I'm glad that we're spending our checks on boring adult stuff.
Yeah. You just heard an excerpt from CityCast Denver, the local Denver daily news podcast. Learn more about subscribing to the podcast at denver.citycast.fm or wherever you get your podcasts.
Before we go, a look at what's coming up on this afternoon's Metro Show. Host Miriam Schiff speaks with Shanika and Matthew Carter, owners of Carter Truck Driving Academy in Aurora, Colorado.
I've been in trucking since 2003, but more on the professional side, the logistics side, and worked as an accountant for several owner-operators, as well as motor carriers. Matthew joined trucking in about 2015 when we met. So for me, trucking has always been a way out of poverty. Even though there was no one in the industry, even on a professional or administrative side, that looked like me, as far as Black, as far as woman, and even in my age demographic, there was no one to say, hey, have you noticed we don't exist in this industry? So Matthew and I moved in 2017 to Colorado with hopes of opening trucking business. We wanted to be motor carriers. Shortly after the move, Matthew was injured and run over, and he almost lost a foot due to an inexperienced driver. Fast forward, he had to put the brakes on the motor carrier dream, and he went to work. Pandemic hit, light bulbs went off. We had a couple of nonprofits that reached out and said, hey, I know you're connected in trucking. Would you all consider training? Like, yeah, no. That wasn't what we wanted to do, but let me get back to you. And so I talked to Matthew, who was a union steward for the United States Postal Service at the time, American Postal Workers Union. And I said, what if we started a school? And he's like, let's do it. We can do it. So with all my knowledge, with all his training, and again, coming from it of a place of employee rights, pretty much knowing what works in trucking, what keeps truckers employed, what keeps them from leaving you, you know, we built the school.
That's coming up on Metro at 3 p.m. right here on KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. That's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Shannon Young. Thanks to Chiara De Mare, Lily Noble, Alexis Kenyon, Luis Licon, Rosanna Longobetter, Miriam Schiff, Christian Garibay, and the CityCast Denver crew for their contributions to today's program. If you'd like to comment on something you heard on KGNU, You can leave us a voicemail at 303-447-9911. We play the messages back on Tuesdays during the Morning Magazine. Stay tuned for a commentary from Jim Hightower, and then it's good old CU with Joe Uhas. That's just after these news headlines from the BBC.